This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The House Appropriations Committee on Thursday passed the defense spending bill, and to the shock of Representative Barbara Lee, included her amendment to revoke the 2001 Authorization for Use of Military Force, or AUMF. Representative Lee had cast the sole vote against going to war in 2001 after the September 11th attacks. That authorization was used by Presidents Bush and Obama to continue the unending war on terror, a war whose targets morphed from one group to another. Earlier this year, President Donald Trump did not even bother citing the AUMF when he authorized the bombing of Syrian airfields. Presidents have to be authorized by Congress to wage war, a requirement that appears these days to have become meaningless. With Lee's amendment in place, is it possible that Congress could finally revoke its 16-year-old authorization? In a minute, we'll turn to Rahul Mahajan to discuss the answer to that question. But first, here is Representative Barbara Lee, 16 years ago, speaking out against the authorization for war.
Thank you, and I want to thank our ranking member and my friend for yielding.
Mr. Speaker, members, I rise today really with a very heavy heart, one that is filled with sorrow for the families and the loved ones who were killed and injured this week. Only the most foolish and the most callous would not understand the grief that has really gripped our people and millions across the world. This unspeakable act on the United States has really forced me, however, to rely on my moral compass, my conscience, and my God for direction. September 11th changed the world. Our deepest fears now haunt us. Yet I am convinced that military action will not prevent further acts of international terrorism against the United States. This is a very complex and complicated matter. Now, this resolution will pass, although we all know that the president can wage a war even without it. However difficult this vote may be, some of us must urge the use of restraint. Our country is in a state of mourning. Some of us must say, let's step back for a moment, let's just pause just for a minute, and think through the implications of our actions today, so that this does not spiral out of control. Now, I have agonized over this vote, but I came to grips with it today, and I came to grips with opposing this resolution during the very painful yet very beautiful memorial service. As a member of the clergy so eloquently said, as we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
And that is Representative Barbara Lee in 2001, just days after the September 11th attacks, giving a speech on the floor of Congress that really would go on to prove to be quite prescient. My guest is Rahul Mahajan. He's active with Our Wisconsin Revolution. He's the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. He's also a PhD student in sociology at the University of Wisconsin. And he's a U.S. foreign policy and empire correspondent for this program. Welcome to the show, Rahul.
Great to be with you.
So were you surprised that Barbara Lee's amendment to this authorization, to defense spending bill, passed even just a House panel, the Appropriations Committee? Was that surprising to you?
Not, in a way, not. I mean, what we've seen as we settle into perpetual war is a complete fracturing of the post-war foreign policy consensus and a fracturing also within the Republican Party on this. So right now we have people on the far right, which is to say the mainstream of the Republican Party, saying things that only people on the far left used to say. You know, we had Donald Trump talking about how the U.S. immorality when he was asked about Putin's immorality. That's a pretty amazing thing for a Republican candidate to say. So in that context, it's not at all surprising. And it's also funny that the authorization for use of military force has sort of continued as something relevant, because if you actually read the text, it refers specifically to the 9/11 attacks, and it involves actions that are directed against people who are involved in the attacks, planning the attacks, harboring those who were involved, and clearly was not intended, at least as written, to be some sort of far-reaching, thoroughgoing authorization for every kind of military force. You can see the Bush administration itself thought as much, because they went to Congress again to get authorization for the Iraq War.
So is it fitting that it's Barbara Lee who brings this amendment to the defense spending bill, the lone vote in 2001 against the original authorization? She was really vilified as unpatriotic for casting that vote, even though what she said back then has really come true.
Yeah, so I think that everybody who approaches this with any sort of open mind and has paid any attention to the facts, and I don't even care where you are exactly on the political spectrum, as long as you're actually open to facts, has known for quite some time that Barbara Lee was right, and, you know, all the other 537 were wrong. So it is fitting that she's the one lone voice, just like Jeanette Rankin was the one lone voice opposing U.S. entry into World War I, that she's the one who is moving it forward now.
Now, you said that Bush went back to Congress to get authorization for the Iraq War. Explain exactly how the technicalities work. Congress is supposed to be the one authorizing military force. Which authorization for military force is in effect right now?
Okay, so the claim has been made consistently by different administrations that the AUMF from 2001 is in force. There's no sunset in that document. Recently, Jack Goldsmith, who worked for the Bush administration, but was also something of a dissident, says that the Iraq War resolution may well be construed to authorize anything the United States does now in Iraq and Syria, because of the language of it, because it was about the threat posed by Iraq rather than the government of Iraq or anything like that. So as a matter of technicality, people can certainly make claims that both of these documents stretch over a great deal of what's happening. I don't think you can stretch them plausibly in any way to cover the Libya war that Obama was responsible for. But, you know, obviously, even if you don't put a sunset into these clauses, I mean, it's been 16 years, and reauthorization at the very least should be on the table.
So this vote that took place last Thursday was in the House Appropriations Committee. So it's one House panel, but of course it's a Republican-controlled panel, since Republicans earned the majority in both chambers of Congress. Will the vote that took place there, and it was attached to, you know, a mandatory bill, a spending bill, the defense spending bill, will that survive a House vote? Will the amendment that Lee put on that defense spending bill survive, you think, a House vote?
Well, the way the Republicans work, if there was any strong directive from the Speaker or the leadership that they don't want to actually, ratify this sort of automatic sunsetting of the AUMF, then I don't think it would have gotten through the committee. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to survive, because just like with the Affordable Care Act, they need a replacement. It's not like they're going to hang themselves out on the idea that Donald Trump is engaged in unauthorized actions in Syria. So they'll have to come up with a new authorization. And that therein, of course, there could be very much a dispute among the Republicans over.
Right. And if they do that, then they own the war that ensues. I mean, that's a big part of it, right?
Yes, but I think in a way that they own it anyway, because Trump is the first person to engage in serious actions against regime targets in Syria. Obama talked a lot, and there was some sort of rhetorical commitment to the idea that Assad had to go, but he didn't do anything about it, and Trump has, so there's a strong difference there.
What do you think would happen in the Senate? And, you know, this is something, there, even if the Republicans are in control of both houses of Congress, there are significantly different dynamics in the Senate versus in the House, even on these issues, right?
Well, let's start with what's in the administration, because that's not clear either, right? So on the one hand, Tillerson is cozying up to Putin.
Secretary of State Tillerson, yeah.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson. On the other hand, Trump is now pushing, war against the regime, or at least some sort of military action. I don't think he's actually interested in a war that might overthrow the regime, but he has threatened them with consequences if they do things that he doesn't like. So the administration itself has nothing remotely resembling a policy. I think the senators are probably mostly aware of that, and I think that in fact it'll be very difficult to get a specific authorization to use military force against the Syrian government from the Senate.
Where are Democrats on all of this? I mean, Representative Barbara Lee is a Democrat. She's a progressive, one of the few progressive Democrats. It's amazing that she's gotten, she's found allies among Republicans. Has she found any among her own party?
Well, I think that, basically, yes, in the sense that not all of them are willing to hang themselves as far out as she is, because repealing the AUMF will bring into question not just attacks against the Syrian regime, which I don't think there's much support for at all among Democrats, but also things like the continued drone warfare, which is had, you know, pretty broad bipartisan support, and nobody really seems to want to challenge, including, you know, frankly, Bernie Sanders didn't exactly come out strongly on that. So, in essence, basically, Democrats are completely in favor of not extending anymore, not having Trump, attack the Syrian government, and not having any authorization for that. But I think they're mostly against sort of bringing up, fixing what ain't broke.
Is, in the end, is this discussion about the authorization for the use of military force more of a symbolic discussion? Because given who we have in the White House, does it even matter anymore that Congress has to sign off?
Well, look, so if we go over some of the past presidents, the two Bushes got congressional authorizations for their wars on Iraq. Bill Clinton didn't get authorization for the Desert Fox campaign. He didn't get authorization for the war in Yugoslavia. And when that was subjected to war powers challenge, he basically ignored it, even though there was kind of a split vote in the House. Obama didn't get authorization for the war in Libya, and then came up with a remarkably facetious argument about why the War Powers Resolution didn't apply, basically because we were shooting at them, but they weren't shooting at us. And so somehow the claim was that since no American soldier was at risk, it wasn't a matter for Congress to decide. So it's not as if it's just Donald Trump, who is probably literally incapable of being president. We've had a number of people set this kind of thing aside in the past. So yes, it is definitely symbolic, and it's not likely to stop Trump from doing whatever he decides to on impulse at 3 a.m. and then, reverses a decision the next day.
Rahul, this moment that we're in right now is ripe for activism. There is so much sort of mass angst over what's happening in the White House. A lot of people are becoming more and more active, have been since the election last year, really. And I know you've become active as well in some on-the-ground movements. But the issue of war doesn't seem to move people as much anymore as it used to, say, you know, 15 years ago when the Iraq War first was launched. What do you make of this idea that, you know, we are so caught up in trying to save Obamacare that we're sacrificing Iraqis, Afghans, Syrians, and others who, you know, who are going to be probably harder hit, especially given the huge boost in defense spending that Trump is pushing for?
Well, so for the last 10 years, at least, I think that war has not been salient for the public and activists. Even as, you know, public opinion turned against the Iraq War and people wanted the troops out, it became not so much a matter for political contention as one for everyone agreeing and just waiting for it to happen. So it would take a lot to make it, you know, really part of the public agenda again. And it's right now, things are hopelessly confused. If you really want to do something about the lives of Syrians, what exactly is that? What policy would you push for? And couldn't you make an argument that the exact opposite policy is actually better for Syrians? I mean, right now we have such a bizarre situation, such a kind of detachment and powerlessness, especially on the activist anti-war left, that we have often people, you routinely see left intellectuals making arguments about Syria that are of the kind that the United States government made about the Vietnam War, what Russia is doing in Syria is not imperialism because it's the at the invitation of the Syrian government. This is exactly what the United States said about the invitation of the South Vietnamese government. We see people not bothering about attacks against various kinds of insurgent groups, even when they kill large numbers of civilians, and incredibly bothered about attacks on military targets like Assad's air base, which probably didn't kill civilians, just the way that the United States didn't consider very seriously attacks in South Vietnam, but it was very concerned about figuring out exactly what it could do in North Vietnam and surrounding areas. So again, we've got this kind of focus on the some legality of the claim that this particular illegitimate dictatorial government is legitimate, just like the U.S. government did with the South Vietnamese government, and lack of concern about more fundamental questions like civilian casualties. So right now, if you try to bring this up in the public sphere in a serious way, I don't even know who my allies would be if I was doing it.
So finally, on this issue of the authorization for use of military force, do you see grassroots activism ramping up? I mean, there's been some media coverage and some progressive outlets like The Nation, The Guardian, but do you see grassroots activism ramping up to say we do need to support the amendment that Representative Lee put into this defense spending bill, or, you know, in addition to the calls people are making on a host of other issues, Do you see people adding this to the list of issues that they should be pushing their elected officials on in the House, in the Senate?
No, I think this one is really mostly flying very much under the radar. And I mean, it's a shame because there could be a debate about the use of military force, about the role of the United States in areas like the Middle East where it has already done a tremendous amount of damage. But I don't think any of that is actually going to happen.
Well, Rahul, that's why we have you on to talk about it and shed some light on this issue. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Thanks. My guest is Rahul Mahajan. He's the author of two books on the Iraq War, Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond, and The New Crusade, America's War on Terrorism. Rahul is also a PhD student in sociology at University of Wisconsin, and he is the U.S. Foreign Policy and Empire Correspondent for Rising Up. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.